So, touching earth, introducing Akshobhya and integration. As I was saying, we're on this journey through the mandala of practice, the mandala of five Buddhas, the five aspects of the Dharma life, the five great stages of the path, and starting off with integration. So integration's about integrity, wholeness, wholeheartedness, being able to say what we do, what we said we would, follow through on things, commit to things, having a sense of agency for who are for our lives and for influencing who we're becoming, who we're going to be, living by our values, really that sort of gathering ourselves to what really matters. Let's see if we can learn anything about that really by dwelling on this blue Buddha to start with. So let's just take a few minutes to look at the image in silence, just to see what it has to say to our spiritual intuition, if anything. It might be also there were some words that resonated with you that we were saying earlier, or not. Just spend some time with this image and see what you notice and what effect it has on you. You might love it, you might hate it.
A kind of stillness about it, isn't there?
Yeah, let's just look a minute, Alison, and I'll.
You said something about no matter how deep you go, that Akshobhya goes deeper, and that felt really something that you could lean into, that felt very holding and supportive. And even though it's the water element, the kind of the touching, the earth touching, I find that very strong, that image of just, I suppose, connecting into the earth. And that being an exchange with some kind of energy. So even though it's water, it's very grounded. And that no matter how deep you go, that you'll be held.
So thanks, Trisha. That sounds like, yeah, two things you can really relax into or lean into in a way, that sense of touching the earth and always more depth or yeah. So. Let's just take a couple of minutes to share in pairs around your responses to the painting and the words, whether there's anything that strikes you about them. So just a couple of minutes each way. If you just turn to the person nearest to you and just see what you notice. Pay attention to your microphone.
Yeah.
So what else did you notice? You've had stillness and depth. You might want to say more about stillness or depth, or there might be something else.
The sense of presence, of being really here, that feeling, and groundedness.
So presence, really here, groundedness, really sort of, present. On the ground, on the earth, stable. So those are kind of qualities of integration, aren't they? That sort of being fully present with yourself, fully aware, fully sort of steady on the earth, fully grounded. That's
there's also something really dynamic about this particular image, but dynamic.
Yeah.
And those qualities are pretty dynamic, aren't they?
Those qualities are dynamic, and this image shows something of that too. I really like that about this image. It's like it's got a lot of stillness, but a lot of energy as well, a lot of sort of vitality and vibrancy. That sort of sense of radiant aliveness. If you're really still, really whole and complete in yourself, there's a kind of energy to that. You can sort of get that sense from the aura, I think, or that sort of sparkling surround to the figure.
I was connected to that lighter little bit, rather than the dark. That fluid, flowing.
Yeah. So you liked the bright bit of the picture. Connected you with flowing water. We were talking about that too. Is it a universe or is it a waterfall, or what is this? Is it a portal to another dimension?
That's kind of interesting, because I'm struggling a little bit tonight to have much of a connection to it, and just dawned on me that one of the reasons why is that we've got the image front and center, well lit, very much the focus, and to me Akshobhya is an image that sits in the shadow of the morning, just at the very beginning of the light of dawn. And it's actually that sense of presence coming out of the darkness and into the light that can, that's where I find my heart going.
Like the dawning of awareness, that's something coming out of the dark.
It's the coming
beginning
of the day.
Of the day.
The coming of the energy.
Something, the shadow being kind of revealed in a way, light coming into the shadows. And that's a very strong metaphor image, isn't it? That connection with the dawn and integration really needs us to do that, doesn't it? To bring light to the shadows, to bring in all aspects of ourselves and gather kind of all of us together. There's a sort of, a potency and a potential in the beginning of that day. That so much energy just about to be revealed in a way.
I was thinking of an image of an anchor. He was talking about the water and the depth and being steady. And also the mindful breathing space is like an anchor, isn't it? Rootedness or keeping you still, keeping you steady.
Akshobhya means imperturbable, so he's an unshakable Buddha, so very rooted, very anchored. That's a good connection with in the kind of turbulent waters of the day. You could have a kind of anchor with the breathing space. But mini meditations through the day.
I was sitting on the bottom of the ocean. Like sort of right at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
fathoms and fathoms of water above him, just this immense ocean of stuff. And
yeah.
He's somehow keeping it at bay.
Mm.
And it also looks like the light at the end of a tunnel. Mm. As if there's still somewhere to emerge from this place.
Mm.
But you're sitting on the ocean floor, which is, well, it's pretty rooted, isn't it? It's the bottom.
Really, really deep.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have that sense of like, oh, if you could really sink low, lower, 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 that's really a still place of, you know, right at the depth of the ocean.
Mm.
I guess there are currents at the bottom of the ocean, but yeah, like, I think most of the froth is at the top, isn't it? There's that sort of like, oh yeah, down there, below it all, you could really settle and be, yeah, really rooted and still. However deep I am, you're deeper. Is that how it went? What was that line that Trish brought out earlier?
I sort of responded to how it feels like sort of between worlds.
Mm.
Sort of definitely here, but also reaching beyond.
Mm. Mm.
In a way that's a little bit, and also in sort of a similar way, kind of there's the groundedness but also floating.
Yeah.
Floating but at the same time really grounded and contradictory.
Yeah.
But it's all there.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like it kind of invites like vertical integration in a sense, like everything's there, like the everyday this world and something beyond that, it's all kind of happening all at once. And
I remember that just made me think, someone talked about how you can have a religion of very much of this or a religion of that, where you think, you know, and you get tendencies in different Buddhist traditions.
Mm.
So it's all about here and now, and it's here and this moment, or it's beyond something. It
yeah.
feels like it's an integration of perhaps.
Synergies. Yeah. Yeah. All of that, all that's here is. Here and now, there is the link to the beyond, or the, yeah, it's all here and now.
I've not seen it before, but Maureen pointed it out.
Yeah.
Which was, you don't know which way the figures
face it. Yeah, it's very mysterious, isn't he? Really.
As soon as you said that, Maureen, it did something to my head. You can't do those two things at the same time. You can't. Really strong.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like one of those optical illusions where you don't know if you're looking at the figure or the ground. And but yeah, I think he is facing us, because I think that his left arm is coming forward to the front from here, the way I can sort of see the outline adjust, but it's not at all obvious. It's true. It's another mystery.
That sense of that it could be both ways puts him very much in the middle.
Mm.
So very centered.
Mm. Mm. So yeah, it's both floating and grounded and very centered. Very.
And is he showing us the way in or the way out?
Yeah, light at the end of the tunnel we're in, the way out, or. Yeah, the way in, which way is he going?
There is a mysterious quality to it, I think, as well. I mean, it is an actual, you know, a silhouette, essentially, isn't it? So that in itself is quite mysterious. But the whole, you know, the colour, the darkness.
Yeah. I love the way the blue just outside the kind of the light bit is so sort of vibrant and alive. It's like very dark blue, but very kind of, it's not, I don't find it cold. It's like when the sky sometimes has that real sort of luminosity, perhaps just after dusk or something. Sometimes you see the sky and it's like dark, dark blue, but something very mysteriously bright about it as well. Very lovely. There's a sort of simplicity to it as well, that just having that sort of silhouette, that outline. It's a mystery, and it's very simple. There's a lot of dark blue and not much detail in it. And I think that's another sort of the quality of simplicity I associate with integration, with like not a lot of clutter in the picture. Despite the sort of vibrancy and aliveness and energy we were talking about, it does feel very sort of serene, that still, grounded, deep feeling. There's a few other things that aren't very easy to see, especially like there's actually an upended vajra which is behind this Buddha statue here, so you can't really see it. So we've got two vajras on the shrine as well. That's a symbol associated with Akshobhya. And I think of that, a vajra's a diamond thunderbolt. It's both at once a thunderbolt and a diamond. It's another of those optical illusion things. You kind of need to hold both of those concepts together somehow and see what that does. So a diamond is also imperturbable. You can't blemish a diamond. You can't damage a diamond very easily. It's just as it is, very sort of purely full of diamond, essential diamondness. And the thunderbolt has all that kind of energy and cutting through, all that power. So there's something about the kind of energy you get when you're really integrated, when you're kind of, you've got all of yourself on side with something you want to do. You haven't got too many different conflicts, different parts of you pulling in different directions. It's got a lot of energy, a lot of power, a lot of ability to do what you want to do, actually, when you really can get yourself really behind something. And I really like the central point of the vajra. I think there's a sort of little sort of sphere right in the middle, and something about, again, that centrality, and that there's all these other bits coming out from it, but they're like all different energies that are all feeding into this central point. So, you know, we can be very scattered, but if we can bring ourselves all together in the middle somewhere, in our core, we can have a lot of power, potential. There's elephants in the picture too. They're hard to see. Right at the bottom, each side of the statue, there's a dark blue elephant on the dark blue background, so it's not that obvious. Elephants are Akshobhya's animals. What do you think of when you think of elephants?
Heavy.
Yeah, heavy. Big. Big. Again, there's this one like, really there, aren't they? Very. They've got a big presence, again. Very sort of, yes.
You can't knock them over.
You can't knock them over, no. You can't knock Akshobhya over. You can't knock elephants over. So, yeah, again, when you're really centred in yourself, you're much less knocked over by all the stuff going on in your life, all the pressures and stresses of life. Elephants have big footsteps, don't they? Just sort of very, and they're very sensitive as well. They can pick up really tiny things with their trunks. Very kind of careful. And they're very sort of got a lot of loyalty and emotional bonding, sangha qualities.
They're said to be wise.
And they're said to be wise.
They're said to be able to remember.
Yeah. So there's that sort of continuity. That's another. They can remember. Integration needs continuity of purpose, remembering what it is we want to do, remembering what our values are, remembering that we intended to practice today.
It can also be very fierce.
They can be fierce, yes. They can be fierce. When they need to be. There's also that story of the Buddha having a kind of fierce, charging, mad elephant coming at him, and somehow the power of his metta was able to make it just sort of stop in its tracks and not trample on him, whatever. So, kind of I think of that when I think of elephants sometimes. Mm. That was the Buddha being very imperturbable in the midst of a sort of field of metta, creating a field of metta.
But if you are aware that animals and small babies as well pick up on what your emotional state is, don't they?
Mm.
Cats
pick up
on your emotions.
Yeah.
And in my experience, small babies do as well.
Yeah, animals pick up your emotions.
Very still when you hold, if you want a baby to go to sleep in your arms.
Keep very calm.
Very calm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You start getting agitated because they're agitated. You get feedback.
Yeah.
So presumably in that story, the elephant picked up on the Buddha's metta. Was influenced by it. Similarly, you can't really see them, but just outside the light aura, there's a whole lot of little demons and things that are kind of being painted in, so you can't really see them very well, but there's a lot of little creatures around there, which refer to just before the Buddha's enlightenment, when he'd really determinedly said, okay, I'm going to sit here under this tree until I find the way, until I find the end of suffering. And he was attacked by Mara, this personification of doubt, and in some stories with all his hordes of distractions and demons. And Taranita may well tell us more about this. He's doing a week on the Buddha in a few weeks. But the Buddha's kind of resolve just carried him through. He wasn't sort of taken away by all these demons, by Mara. So that's what's going on round there. It's like there's all this distraction, all these kind of creatures trying to divert the Buddha, and he's just sitting there in the middle. In the story, what the Buddha did, the story of the Buddha, was touch the earth. And so Akshobhya has one hand touching the earth like this to remind us of that, is linking to the earth, which, as I think Trish was saying, you get this sense of the energy of the earth being able to kind of flow into him and vice versa, sort of real connection, rootedness there. But he touched the earth and called on his sense of his practice. Mara was saying, what right have you got to sit here? What right have you got to think you can gain enlightenment? And the Buddha said, I've practiced for countless lifetimes, and called the earth to be his witness for that, to support him. So I think that's really important too. It's got a sort of confidence. It's like, if we can really go, this is what I'm doing, it's all right, it's good enough. Touch the earth, call on all the efforts you've made, all the intentions you've had for the good of yourself and others, the world.
I'm also thinking about, reaching rock bottom, which just doesn't sound that pleasant and positive, a bit like what Micah said about, when sort of something really dawns on you and it's like quite sobering. There's nowhere else to go, that's it. It's sort of terrifying, but at the same time also it brings clarity. Wondering, about the demon. So there is.
Yeah.
There's also. It's not all plain sailing.
Yeah.
That's my sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Life isn't all plain sailing, is it? There is all sorts goes on, and sometimes clarity can be very sobering. It can show us things that can feel like really touching rock bottom, really kind of coming down to earth in a way from your fantasies about who you were or what you were. And then there's kind of, you're on the ground and you know where to go with that. From rock bottom, you can only go up. or forward.
Which might involve actually looking at your own demons, of course, mightn't it?
Yeah, it might well.
Going to the depths is actually having the courage to look at what's really, really happening and bringing that on board too. Integration is about bringing
all of yourself.
Bringing our shadows.
Badra's doing an evening in a couple of weeks on befriending our various selves. So I imagine that will take us into that sort of territory, bringing all the aspects of ourselves into the light and moving forward together. Our light and our shadows. And that's Akshobhya's wisdom, is particularly associated with wisdom, but each of the Buddhas has a particular sort of flavour of wisdom. And Akshobhya's wisdom is the mirror-like wisdom. So that's got that clarity that Beata was talking about. It's like the images in a clear mirror are very clear, but they don't stick, do they? They're not substantial. They're not kind of quite the real thing. So Akshobhya sees vividly, clearly, what's going on, exactly who we are, really. But really non-judgmental. There's not a lot. There's no sort of emotional baggage with it. There's, you know, a mirror is very sort of just as it is. It's not saying, and that's really bad, and that's really great. And I think that kind of quality helps us to really bring our shadows into the light, if you like, bring all aspects of ourselves in. That non-judgmental awareness helps us to just say, oh yeah, so I'm like that, without making a big drama of it. So that kind of allows things to flow, allows the movement of life, actually. You know, just can kind of dance in the mirror. So that's all very well. We've got some sense of some quite attractive aspects of things we'd like, I think. Stillness, depth, the ability to really be steadfast, steady in the storms of life. The energy of gathering all our various selves behind our intentions, behind what we want to do. Stillness, serenity, simplicity, radiant aliveness, wholeness. So you have to practice to get that to happen. So I'm going to suggest that we all take on extra practices this week. Those people who are in my Mitra group have already got extra practices this week, so they might want to just keep doing the same ones rather than keep adding more and more things in, because life might get complicated. But yeah, if you've already got a long established practice, some people here have got a lot of experience, these things might seem very simple, but I suggest you just give it a try, just add in a little extra thing. So I think these are all very doable for everybody. So I'm going to suggest you do at least one of these four things for the next week, and then check back about it next week on Sangha night. So the four things you might take on to do are the 3-minute breathing space, or 3-stage breathing space. It's variously described as 3 minutes or 3 stages. Even the ones calling it the 3-minute are usually nearly 4 minutes, I notice. I looked a couple up online just this afternoon. If you Google 3-minute breathing space, you'll find it on YouTube, you'll find, you know, audio lead-throughs. There's lots of different people leading slightly different versions of it, so you could find someone to guide you in it, if you like, while you're learning it, or just anyway, just every day. But if you could do that at least once a day, and maybe 3 or 4 times every day for a week, you might find it has a surprising effect. It just gives you that little window of stillness and awareness in whatever you're doing. You can do it because you've got really a bit wound up and busy. You can just go, okay, just stop. So the 3 stages are becoming aware. So just becoming aware what's going on around you, what's going on with you. How am I just now? Feelings, thoughts, body. Gathering, so gathering your attention to the breath. So you're just doing like a little light mindfulness of breathing for about a minute. That's 2 stages. 3rd stage, expanding. So opening your awareness again to what's around you, what else is going on. And forming an intention to take that bit more awareness into your next activities as you go on through your day. So it's very much a in the midst of daily life practice. And yeah, it can have surprisingly big effect. And you don't have to find ages to do it. It's not like saying you're going to meditate for an hour or something. 3 minutes, it's not that hard. The trick is to remember. So you might need to think about what's going to remind you, or, you know, are you going to do it every time you put the kettle on, or something like that, instead of going off to do something else. Yeah. Last week I burnt out my coffee pot because I wasn't going to stand there for 3 minutes while it boiled. I went off and got busy on the email, and after the smell of burning had been with me for a while, I realised what had happened. So, you know, just spend 3 minutes just really gathering yourself, while perhaps while the kettle boils, or some other trigger before you have meals, before you leave the house. What, you know, what would be a time that you could do that? Think about it. So that's one of my suggestions. And yeah, I particularly advocate that one. The second is to do a mindful walk. This is especially good if you already walk somewhere every day, like if you walk to work or something like that. If you've got a regular walk you do, or if you could do in your lunch break or something, and you take on to do that every day for a week. It doesn't have to be long. It could be a 10-minute walk, could be a half an hour walk. It might be best to start with, if you do a long walk, think about just being mindful for 10 minutes so it's not too much of a big ask. And just walk mindfully. Notice your feet on the ground, notice the sensations of your body, notice what's around you, notice that you're getting carried away in thoughts, come back to your feet on the ground again and again. There's Maitreya Bandhu says in course book for the year, reminder, in the book, every time you notice your mind kindly and intelligently, you become more integrated. Every time you polarise with what's going on in your mind, you create more disintegration. So, like the mindfulness of breathing, the practice is the coming back. Every time you do that kindly, in a mirror-like, non-judgmental way, it's creating that little bit more integration in you. So it's a strong integration practice to do the mindfulness of breathing, to do the 3-minute breathing space, to do mindful walking, where you're just really setting out to bring yourself back to the sensations time and again. My third suggestion is a daily mindful meal, especially if you can eat, if you eat by yourself, or whoever you eat with could be, you know, get behind this, be agreeable to this, so you're sitting quietly, just eating. No radio, no telly, no checking your phone. Very demanding, I would find. Just being aware of eating, the taste of the food, the texture of the food. What are you doing? How are you in yourself, in your body? And again, when you notice your thoughts taking you off, you come back, feel your weight on the chair, taste your food, and you do that however often you need to. The coming back is the integrating practice. So those are all described in Maitreya Bandhu's book. So if you want to just remind yourself what the practices are and how to do them, they're all in there. My fourth suggestion is that you bring Akshobhya to mind, particularly if you've got some connection with the Blue Buddha and his qualities, or if you're enjoying just sort of soaking in the colour of this painting this evening, if that's sort of doing something for you, then see if you can just remember that through your day. I had today set aside for preparing this evening, but I wasn't doing that today. I was preparing for going to India tomorrow. I'm actually very scattered. I'm sort of all over the place. My clothes are scattered over 2.5 rooms. I've got things to remember, things to plan, things I'm printing out, and I'm just kind of, you know, that's kind of where my interest is today. And as I drove through Bristol on my way back home, because I'd just driven from Bishopston to Clifton without my purse, and I went, okay, what you have to do is just go home again and come back again, it's all right. I thought, and you need to be thinking about Akshobhya, don't you, for this evening. Really, this, you know, this extra time is cutting into the time for planning the evening. And I thought, okay, you can do that now as you're driving. And I just kind of went, oh, unshakable, deep blue. And something in me dropped and was all right. just, yeah, somehow I was a bit more whole, a bit more settled, a bit more gathered just by having that thought. Just, okay, just think deep, deep drop, still, yep, that made a difference. So I think if you were to do that several times a day, that would have an effect. So if that's the sort of thing that grabs you, you might consider that. I'm going to ask you to get into, what time is it, maybe threes, and just tell each other what you would like to do this week. I suggest you just pick one or at most two of those things. Mindful meal every day, mindful walk every day, 3-minute breathing space as often as you can, bringing Akshobhya to mind as often as you can. I suggest you just choose one, maybe two, and make it something that's doable, something that's going to work with the kind of life you've got and that you're going to have in the next week. And make it specific. Think about how you're going to remember. That's the hard thing. It's not hard to stop and notice your breathing for 3 minutes, but it's hard to remember to do that. So think about when you're going to do it, what's going to trigger you to actually do that. And yeah, you might help each other with that. So we've just got 10 minutes, so it's quite short, just to check in with a couple of other people about what you'd like to do in the next week. Off you go.